What's up, everybody? This is Ryan Staley, and you are listening to the Sales and Marketing Built Freedom podcast, where we share with you the underground ninja skills and tactics the top sales and marketing leaders are using to create financial and lifestyle freedom. And the question that everybody is asking is, how do I create financial and lifestyle freedom for me? That is the question, and this show is the answer. Welcome, everybody, to the Sales and Marketing Built Freedom show. I have a very special guest with me on today. I have Peck Pohnpat, who is the founder of Impeccable. It has an amazing history that I'm really excited to share with you today. He started off doing motion martial arts for Mortal Kombat, then became a VP of product, and then went from freelancer to founder on his journey to a multi-million dollar company. Peck, welcome. Happy to have you on, man.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, man. So it's, go ahead. What were you going to say? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. Just keep going.
Yeah. So I met Peck actually through just kind of through our networks, kind of through the podcast area. And once I learned his story, I thought it'd be really cool to share and for everyone to hear because of his bootstrap journey. So Peck, can you kind of walk through your journey, how you got to where you're at, basically your superhero origin story, so everybody knows that how this man, myth, and legend was created?
Well, so just to set the story straight, the motion capture for work for Mortal Kombat never was a career path. It was definitely a passionate hobby that led to an opportunity to do work for the video game industry. But that was never something that I felt like I could make a living. You know, I'd be more of a starving artist. I've always had a career in tech. I was an engineer first. And then at some point, I became a designer, self-taught designer. And then in the third chapter of my career, I became an entrepreneur. Although I've always had dreams of becoming an entrepreneur, even before that, throughout my engineering and design career, I always had ideas in which I would execute. I call them ideas, I call them projects, because they were never really good business models. At the time, I lacked a lot of tools. I didn't have sales skills, marketing skills. But through my journey of entrepreneurship and bootstrapping my own company to a seven-figure business, it's now a 10-year-old company, picked up a few skills. I would say I'm an okay salesperson now. Just to kind of set the stage, I've closed over $17 million in business throughout my career. And yeah, we're a three-time Inc. 5000 company, and we typically serve the enterprise in our software development, software design agency. Happy to tell you more about that.
Yeah, well, and so I could add color because, like, obviously the Inc. 5000 fastest growing three times in a row. I think that's super impressive, man. So hats off to you for doing that. Also being bootstrapped, it's a lot harder to, in my opinion, sometimes if you don't have the right setup to bootstrap. But I think it's a better way to go. You know, I'm a little biased because that's the route I'm going, right? But is it okay if I drop a few of the customers you've worked with? Is that okay if we say them online?
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's what blows me away. You know, you've done work for Apple. You've done work for Google, Adobe, Twilio. I mean, some of the biggest companies in the world have leveraged your services. So I want to go deeper on that. Like, how did you, as being a bootstrap startup, get some of the biggest companies in the world, right? Apple's at what, $2 trillion valuation? Or is it $3 trillion now? Like some ridiculous amount. So let's talk about that. How did you get into those monsters? How did you make that happen? And how did that reality kind of take place?
Well, like everything, it's gradual, right? Nothing happens overnight. Nothing. You don't land those customers the moment you plant a flag and say, hey, I'm going to open a company, start selling my wares, selling my services. You don't immediately get those companies. You work your way up to that. You know, you stepstone up to that. In the beginning, the other thing too is when I moved, I'm from Chicago, just like you. But when I had the impulse, I wasn't getting any younger at the time. I was a VP of product at a funded company here in Chicago. But after a year of that, I realized that really I didn't want to be a VP at somebody else's company. I wanted to start my own company. And I wasn't getting any younger. And I had a good friend in the Bay Area who was kind of waiting on the sidelines for me to come join him to start a company together. So that's what I did. I quit my job cold turkey and left the comfort of Chicago, which is home for me, and drove across the U.S. to meet with his co-founder. And we tried a couple of ideas. I would say, again, you know, well, both of us were really technical people. He was an engineer. I was a designer, ex-engineer, and neither of us had sales and marketing skills. So you can guess where that went. We tried a couple, building a couple products, but we both sucked at sales. We both sucked at marketing. So we couldn't get the word out for our product because we didn't have the necessary skills or the connections. So needless to say, that failed. And I had to make some money, right? My bank account was, you know, after trying a few bootstrapped ideas for almost a year, my bank account was running low and my wallet was getting a little lighter. So I had to do something. So I said, you know, I just raised my hand like, look, I'm available for work. Pretty good at, turns out I'm pretty decent at product design. So my skills were very much in need very quickly. And I remember that at some point I had three clients and they all wanted 40 hours out of me. And I was working a lot of hours for 3 months. And I said, you know, if I keep doing this, I was making bank as an hourly freelancer. But at some point I said, if something doesn't change, I'll just keel over and die. I quickly hired an intern designer who would help me and relieve me. I would guide them and mentor them. And that worked out really well. So we, you know, what started out as a freelance business quickly became a tiny little agency. We finished the first year freelancing with two full-time designers. So one part-time freelancer is like, oh, that worked out really well. And instead of, you know, demand just kept growing. So I didn't want to stop, I guess. And I just hired two more people. And the business organically grew. But we started out, you know, to your point, we didn't have large customers in the beginning. We had mostly startups. We got our first break with a large brand or logo is LegalZoom. And that was because we worked for a startup, which then got acquired to LegalZoom. So in actuality, the working relationship never changed. I still work with the same founder, still designing the same product, but the people cutting the checks were now different. So I basically got air quotes LegalZoom as a client because they acquired that company and that became a LegalZoom product. So nothing in due to my part at all in terms of getting a big client logo.
That's awesome, man. And then you just stacked on there, I assume, from, you know, once you had one, then you just kept adding more and more, and then it just kind of became a snowball running downhill after a while.
Right. And actually, you know, when I, as I mentioned, I moved to the Bay Area, but all my contacts were in Chicago. One of my first freelance clients was actually working remotely for Groupon being a Chicago company. You know, when people are first starting out, right, it's hard to trust is, what is a brand, right? Brand is someone you trust, you know, a service, a product, a company that you trust. And, you know, people in the Bay Area didn't really know me yet. So there was no trust established there. But the folks in the technical social circles that I was in Chicago knew me to be a decent designer. And somebody at Groupon hired me to do some work, or our agency to do some work. So in the beginning, I still had some clients in Chicago where there was high trust for who I am and me and my capabilities. So we had some logos. Motorola, again, also a Chicago company, was one of our early big brand clients, I would say. So you know, if you look at that, it's like, well, I didn't really, even though I transplanted all the trust variables and the trust factors were still in Chicago. So some of the work was coming from Chicago. And I think once you get enough logos, right, you got LegalZoom, Motorola, Groupon, they're like, oh, okay, you guys do some good work for big brands, really legit. And then so that way I was able to kind of stepstone up the ladder and get more companies in the Bay Area.
Okay, and we're going to come back to this, but there's a couple things I don't want to skip over. So I love the fact that you're like, I'm a VP at a company and I don't want to be the vice president at somebody else's company. I want to do my own thing. I don't think I ever told you this, but that's kind of where I was at, man. Same thing. I'm like, I'm tired of doing this for someone else and having them ride me into the ground, for their dream. You know, I want to follow my own dream. Right. And so I think that's very admirable that you took the step, and went almost sounds like cold, right. And tried it and, worked your way through a couple failures. So props to you, man, on that. And then second, did I hear you say, you said three clients wanted you working 40 hours a week? Was that right? You were working 120 hours a week?
Yeah, easily 80 to 120 hours a week. I probably wasn't working you know, up to, they wanted me up to 40 hours, as much as they could have me, but, you know, maybe as much as I could give them was maybe 30 hours a week. I'm still making, I don't know. I don't think 80, 90 hour work weeks are that long, I guess. I don't know. Maybe from my, I also had experience, I'll date myself, but the early, the first wave of .com days where startups were working like mad. So I graduated my computer engineering degree at the height of the first .com boom. And even in Chicago, there were plenty of startups. And I remember some of the early, my early memories of being an early engineer were working for startups where some of my friends would sleep underneath the desk. I would sleep on the couch. We'd work 7 days a week, really long days, Monday, Saturday. And then Sunday was a regular day of 8 hours, but Monday through Saturday was like 16-hour days. And we did that during the .com days, you know, so that was my trial by fire. But everything was new and everything was exciting then, right? Like at the time, companies like Hotmail and PayPal and Google, Yahoo, they were all brand new and things were happening and the internet was just being born. And it was just so exciting. It was just an exciting time. So we were just going along with that.
Riding the wave, yeah. I mean, so, and I don't really like talk to a lot of founders about this, but since we're on the topic, I would love to go there is, you know, now that you're on the other side of that, right? And like, you just took time off, right? You just took a sabbatical for 3 months. And now that you've been in your business a while, you know, now that you're, I guess, on the other side of that, what would you recommend to founders that are trying to go from zero to one or one plus that are still, shall we say, in the shit sandwich phase where they're having to put tons of hours in? I mean, any advice you would give them?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to, I don't know if I would have changed anything, right, in the past, but I do know that once you get to a certain point and you can breathe a little bit, you should step on the gas because it is a marathon, not a sprint. And by definition, you can't run 30 miles, 40 miles an hour on a marathon all the time because you're going to burn yourself out. So you have to pace yourself. And in the early days when you don't have a lot of resources, all you have is time and hustle, maybe that's when you have to. But if that's, you know, if you're 10 years in and still doing that, maybe there's something wrong there. And, that's time. I think when you see yourself doing something for too long, I think it all starts with awareness. When you have resources, you still find yourself going back to doing the stuff. Like maybe you don't have to do it anymore, right? When I have account managers, do I actually need to? The CEO's time is actually much more valuable doing high-level, long-term strategic work that will benefit the company long-term, not taking care of one individual account or taking initial BD calls where there may not even be qualified leads. I was still doing that at, say, year 8, year 9, because that's what I did in the beginning, right? And I don't think I ever stopped to pause to think, should I be doing this? Am I serving the company best by doing this now? So I think having the awareness, kind of pause, taking a moment to pause and evaluate everything that you're doing. And is this the best use of your time, right? If pretend that you are an external person, right? And you hired this CEO to do a job, and you're paying them lots of money in the form of equity and or compensation, right? And you think, well, is this the best use of this person's time to be taking initial calls, right? To be working on this individual deck or, you know, to be managing this individual project if you're paying the CEO, right? Just because that person is you doesn't excuse how you should leverage them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a great way. And I heard someone else mention very similar. It's along the lines of like, okay, if you know, first of all, who do you consider your hero, let's say in the business world, right? And then if your hero was following you around, you know, someone you aspire to be like all day, what would they say about what you were doing and spending your time on, right? And so it goes along with the same thing. Like if you had an external consultant looking at you as an employee, are you effectively using your time? So I love that, man. Hello, and I appreciate you listening to the show today. I love my listeners and I love helping my customers. One of the things that I've been able to do with some of the customers that I've been working with is, for example, a $6 million SaaS company, helped them implement a seven-figure sales system in which they got a 1.5 month ROI on the entire engagement fee that I offered them by one person spending 25% of their time. And this person wasn't even in sales. So these are core principles that help me scale from $0 to $30 million in annual recurring revenue with only four people. In addition, another client that I'm working with was able to 10x their licensing fee, their SaaS licensing fee, and they are really, really just on the early side of starting. So if you're interested in learning more, apply through www.scalerevenue.io/apply, www.scalerevenue.io/apply. Look forward to seeing your application. If you are interested and qualify, you'll receive a follow-up note and we can jump on the phone and identify what the opportunity is exactly for you and your organization. So let's shift gears a little bit. How did you get, Apple or Google as a customer? Because we went away from that. I want to go back to that. How did you get Apple or Google as a customer? Walk us through that process.
Some of our big customers, the technique is not to get it yourself. It's through an introduction. Actually, a lot of business, even today, is through word of mouth or introductions. It's people I know. My running joke is I actually don't know how to sell because I can only sell to people I know. So I can't sell to perfect strangers, right? Like businesses like McDonald's, Starbucks, whatever, they sell to perfect strangers all the time. I actually don't know how to do that. I can't seem to sell to perfect strangers, but I can sell to people who know and trust me. How we got Google, I don't even remember, it was so long ago, but Apple was through an introduction through Adobe. So we partnered, so just to maybe set the stage a bit, we got good at certain things. We got good at design. We got good at communications technologies. So we eventually became partners to companies including Twilio and Adobe. So when, for example, how we got Nike was Nike had a problem there. They were using Twilio and they were having a problem with SMS and they were trying to achieve something. And they're like, you know, we have this problem. I need some help. And Twilio's like, oh, you got to talk to Impeccable. They've been working Twilio for a long time. We trust them as a development partner, implementation partner. So we just got an introduction. So we got walked right through the door, sort of figuratively speaking, right? Imagine us being a small, tiny agency, right? Sub 40 people trying to pitch Nike on why we're qualified. It's like, oh man, it's be an uphill battle, right? When you are deep enough, when you know something deep enough and you are trusted by that brand, in this case, Twilio, and they recommend you, that's worth its weight in gold because they just walk you right through the door. Instead of me pitching Nike, it's just straight to work. Okay, what do you need? You know, here's the problem, right? Instead of, why should we work with you?
That's awesome. I love that. Have you read the book, The Third Door at all? Have you ever read that book? By, I think it's Alex Banyan. So it's a story about how this student basically hacked his way, got into The Price is Right. I don't know if I think he got to the Showcase Showdown. So he figured out their whole selection strategy, got on there, used that as a launching point. And then what he made a determination that he's like, I'm going to interview the top people in the world on and write it in a book. Right. And so he talks about this whole journey and a lot of it's what you're talking about through introductions and his long story short, you know, the high level summary, I'm not going to ruin it for you. But I mean, he got interviews with Bill Gates, Pitbull, a lot of the top, I'm having brain fart in terms of who are some of the other people, but really impressive people that are, Warren Buffett, you know, hard people to get to, right? They're not just people you walk down and you're like, hey, let me talk to Bill. You know what I mean? And so long story short, he's like, it's kind of like a nightclub, right? You could be like everybody else that stands in line and waits for 3 hours to get in and pays a $50 cover charge. You could be VIP where you throw a lot of money to get access in, or you could take the third door, which is someone. So they walk you through the kitchen, you get in for free and you have the best accommodations. Right. And so that's his analogy that he uses. So it kind of reminds me of your story of how you got into Apple and Nike is hey, you knew someone, they just walked you in and they're like, all right, well, we already trust you because we trust so-and-so. So yeah. So I love that, man. So what would you say, Peck, is your ninja skill? If you had to break it down, something that founders or revenue leaders can learn from, what would you say is your ninja skill?
Well, physically speaking, I have real ninja skills. That's why how I got the work to do the moves for the Mortal Kombat video game. So many years ago, I was a real life ninja. My business ninja skill.
Wait, can I stop you on that?
Sure.
You're the first person out of I think 60 that I've interviewed that ever literally said, okay, well, I technically have real life ninja skills. So I do have those. But when you talk about business, so I'm giving you props because you're literally the first real ninja I've interviewed on the show. So anyways, go ahead, Matt. Keep going on the business side.
Well, here's a story of the third door that you'll like this because you talk about clubs. At some point, I also started teaching martial arts. And a lot of the people who go to martial arts schools, oftentimes they use them in their career. So let's say they're bouncers and stuff. So in this, you can see where this is going. But I would go to clubs. I didn't like in Chicago, especially as I was teaching school, some of the students were bouncers. So I don't like going to clubs where I don't know the bouncer, because then you're in line like everybody else versus, you know, you just walk up and the bouncer hugs you. You don't even need to tip them because you're their instructor, right? And you get like, hey, Peck, you know, and they pay me respect and they walk me right through. So quite literally, you know, the bouncer analogy is what I had when I was doing martial arts. I guess my ninja skill would be the one thing I tell everybody is it's relationships. And the mental image I have is Steve Ballmer, if you remember his developer speech. I'm just like relationship. Everything I have is due to relationship. This podcast was, you know, you reaching out, us having a conversation, having a coffee meeting, building a relationship. Everything, even when I get certain logos, the reason we got Twilio as a client was the person that we worked with at Aruba Networks. We did such a great job for them. We were working for them. He moved to Twilio and he's like, oh, Peck and Impeccable do great work for me at my previous company. We're just dragging him along. And then through that, you know, I worked with another person and then that person went to Stripe. We did a great job at Twilio. So she dragged me along over to Stripe. So it's just making sure that you keep good relationships wherever you go. And this extends not just to clients, but also employees. I like to, when people leave, you know, I have the distinction. I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, we as a design agency produce very good designers. We had designers who started with us and then go off to companies like Slack or Facebook or Zoom, Samsung, Apple. And I kind of call them plants sometimes because they have a good experience working here. And sometimes, you know, when they're looking for an agency, these people have such a great experience working at Impeccable, they'll recommend Impeccable. And there you go. So relationships, and on both sides, right? Clients, the people that you work with. Sometimes, you know, people, when people leave, well, even me, I used to take it very personally when, you know, because it's my company. So I took it very hard when people left. I thought it was because of me, or they were unhappy with the company, or something I did, or my failure in leadership. But people have different life motivations. They have different life goals, and maybe they have to have a change in life situation because their spouse, you know, something changed, right? And their life priorities change, right? So now my attitude is, you know, you have the people while you have them, and hopefully you have treat them so well that they always think of you fondly, even after they leave, and you can be a source of recommendation.
That's awesome, ma'am. I love it. And yeah, I mean, I noticed, I don't think I've ever seen anybody that has as many personal recommendations as you do on LinkedIn. Like, I'm just saying, it's, you could tell you practice what you preach, because like, I've never seen, I think it was like 70 plus recommendations from people, which I think is amazing. And you know, I guess to take it one level deeper, if you had to break it down, because a lot of people fall short or they don't know and they hear relationships in general. How do you get, like, do you have like a 3 or 4 step framework you use to keep active relationships with people or to build those deep relationships and leave that lasting impression? Or are there a few things that you focus on, like 3 or 4 things, just so that the listener can understand like where he's coming from and how you basically network into Apple and Google and Nike, you know, because I think there's something there that we're just on the surface of.
Yeah, there are some tactics. One, I've developed a decent habit of just checking in with people every so often. I actually don't even have software for that, but I'm actually in the process of evaluating some reminder software. but you know, I kind of just do this mentally or on paper or just check my email like, oh, I haven't talked to this person in a while. But I generally, in my mind, I'm always thinking, oh, who have I not talked to in a while? Let's check in on them. So that's one thing is just having loose connections, right? Lots of people, and there's no agenda. Lots of people contact whatever person because they need something, right? It's like, oh, I want X from you. That's why I'm contacting you. And that's not really a great basis of relationship if you're on the receiving end. That this guy never calls me, but every time he calls me, he wants something from me, right? So my thing is just, hey, let's just do a catch up. How are you doing in life? So I'd say I'm pretty decent at doing that. I'd like to be even better, but through the use of software and reminders. But that's kind of what I do. Another tactic is I use LinkedIn is really good for this because LinkedIn tells you they even have a feed of when people change jobs. Well, you know, if a person you know pretty well changes jobs and goes into a company that you might want to work for or is your perfect customer profile, to use your words, that's a good time to check in with them. So I might send them a note. Everybody sends a canned congrats, you know, blah, 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 Ryan. You don't even type that, right? LinkedIn suggests that. That's super weak. So I usually type a custom message and I'll say something like, hey, congrats on the new job. I know you're going to be busy, you know, just getting your bearings. Let's catch up in a month or so. And I send a calendar link and that's it. But, you know, this is a way to congratulate them. It also kind of gives them, like, if you hit them up when they change jobs, they don't even know what they're working on yet. So, you know, it's not a very good time. But if you let them get their bearings and, you know, they have an assignment, and they have some goals they have to hit, that might be a good time to see if there's anything you can do to help.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I love that because you're basically, I mean, just to look at my notes. So you keep in touch, you have no expectations. And then I like the fact they get a new job. You just put a, I don't want to say put a bug in your ear. That sounds negative, but you get back on their radar as well, just saying like, hey, let's catch up in a month or so when you get your bearings. So I think that's a really sharp way to do it. And I love that. And I love the fact that you're checking in with people with no expectation. Because you're right. A lot of people are not like that, you know, so I'm sure it's really refreshing. And it sounds like you've sustained that habit over a long period of time, which is why you've gotten the results you have with the network you have, you know. So I think that's really cool, man.
The other thing, too, you can do is, let's see, I kind of lost my thoughts. Maybe I want to cut this. There was a third point here.
You had three. We had keeping contact, no expectation, new job. Those were kind of like the three bullet points he had.
What was it? There's something else I do that I can't think of. You can just cut this whole part out, please. You can move on. Maybe it'll come back.
Okay, no problem. We'll cut it out. Okay. So thanks for sharing that. Those were great tips of kind of what are good opportunities to keep in touch, and it just shows the outcome of doing the right thing over a long period of time. So we're just about up on time. So I guess in light of that, I want to ask you a couple quick questions. We'll do a quick fire down, right? I like to do this every now and then. And, you know, you and I have some similarities, but at the same time, we're very different as well. So what would you say is the best book you've ever read? Favorite book, I should say.
Man, I read so many books. It's hard to pick a favorite. It's really hard. And a favorite now, like, you're a different person and the stage of the company is different. So my favorite book right now is Leading with Emotional Courage.
Oh, I've never heard of that book. Who's it by?
It's by Peter Bregman. So, you know, in the early days, there's just tons of startup books, right? Like, you know, kind of like the Lean Startup book and all these other books. They're great books for business strategy and actual business. Well, but once you get to a certain size and, you know, you have, this is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like, you have revenue, your default alive, you have product market fit, you start thinking about more higher level stuff, right? Your employees, your team's mental health, your, you know, kind of communications within the team, a more well-functioning team, a more well-oiled, you know, if you think of a really professional sports team, right? They don't even need to talk sometimes. They just understand each other. They work with each other so well. That's kind of the team that I aspire to have. So those are the types of books now that I'm reading, is how to make the team better. But again, you know, if you don't even have product market fit yet, maybe this is not the good best book to deal with right now. So I can't really recommend it. It has to be contextual. Another good book that I've read many years ago, Founders at Work, is just on my bookcase right now. I really enjoy that book. Founders at Work is Jessica Livingston from YC. She interviews, each chapter is a founder, and it's not just kind of hurt their companies, but you know, the founder of VisiCalc, the founder of Acrobat, or the founder of Hotmail, founder of Hot or Not. And so there are lots of good stories of tech startup founders if you're into that sort of stuff. For bootstrap company, I think the E-Myth book, I've read it like 3 times. I remember the first time I read it, I hadn't had my own company yet, so it didn't really resonate. It didn't, at the time, it didn't apply to me, and I didn't think it was a great book. And then I reread it again, kind of sort of mid-company, and I got a lot more out of it. And then my third reading, I got even more out of it. So I also try to reread stuff that I haven't read in a long time.
I need to read Think and Grow Rich again. I read that book probably 6 years ago and didn't have my own company, anything. And there's books like that. I agree with you. Like, I used to be of the mindset like, okay, you read it once, you're done. But there's other books I've read a couple times. I read this book called, you might like it actually, called U Squared, or The Quantum Leap Strategy. Have you heard of those books?
No, U Squared.
So those two books are by Price Pritchett. I think his name is Price Pritchett. And the cool thing about it is those books are only 36 pages long, each of them. But it's on like exponential versus incremental thinking. So, and I you know, obviously I could tell from meeting you before, but also just this interview, like, you're a deep thinker. So I think it'll resonate with you, man. So like myself, I'm a deep thinker.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very flattering. Like Jim Collins books, Good to Great, Built to Last, all that stuff. I've also reread some of those books a couple times as well.
Awesome. Well, good stuff, man. I appreciate having you on the episode, and that was great insight. And I love, you know, kind of how you built to where you're at and where you're going. And so where can people find you? Where can they learn more about you? And where can they learn more about Impeccable?
Sure. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Try to post some stuff there. Also, I have my own podcast, a design podcast, because our agency is pretty good at design, and we want to build design thought leadership, but it's called What is UX, which I have Ryan linked in the notes, whatisux.co, but we interview design leaders from amazing companies. So example, like YouTube's first designer, Yelp's first designer, designers from Tesla or Lucid Motors, the growth designer at Netflix. So amazing stories. And there's a slight BIPOC angle. I try to get women, minorities, Asians. When I first started my journey of, like, for the longest time, I didn't know any Thai designers. And I thought, I was like, I like this weird anomaly. I don't know anyone who looked like me. So I wanted to start a project where I would celebrate. And as I dig deeper and I started asking around, there are, right? You just have to try to look for them. But I found, since then, I've found Thai designers. I've found lots of Filipino designers. I've found Laotian designers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, and we try to feature women, as lots of women as well. So yeah, that's been a little project of mine. So anyone, if you want to get a sneak peek of what, you know, designers do at those companies, and especially in those roles, because design is so specialized now, like a growth designer is different than a design system designer or stuff like that, or an automotive designer versus a healthcare designer. That would be a good thing for you to listen to if you're into that sort of thing like I am.
That's awesome, man. Well, we'll definitely put that in the show notes so people could check you out, check out your podcast, check out your company. And, you know, it was great having you on, and I really, really appreciate it, man. And look forward to seeing you more in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Huge honor for me. Thank you.
Thanks, brother. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you for spending the time with me today. I know that time is one of the most valuable resources, so I truly honor and appreciate you coming along this journey with me. One of the things that I want to ask you is, if you really truly enjoyed this and know someone that this can make an impact on, please share this episode with them. If you're on a journey for financial and lifestyle freedom, it is always exponentially better if we're building a tribe with like-minded people who are on the same journey. In addition, I have an amazing PDF for you that could be career-changing in terms of the content. Essentially, what it is are the top 10 questions that every big customer is asking behind closed doors that no one is telling you about. I'll put a link for it in the show notes, so check it out. It's my free gift for you for being a part of this launch and being a part of this journey with me, and I hope to see you soon.